And I will start by introducing my interviewee today, Professor Valentin Mogaddam. Born in Tehran, Professor Mogaddam received her higher education in Canada and the US. In addition to her academic career, she has been a senior research fellow at UNU WIDER in Helsinki, Finland, between 1990 and 1995, and a section chief at UNESCO in Paris between 2004 and 2006. Professor Mogaddam's areas of research are globalization, revolutions and social movements, transnational feminist networks, and gender development and democratization in the Middle East and North Africa. In addition to many journal articles, she has authored 5 books, including 2 award-winning books, and has edited 9 books. She is co-author with Shemiran Mako of After the Arab Springs, Arab Uprisings, Progress and Stagnation in the Middle East, forthcoming with Cambridge University Press in 2021. Professor Mogaddam has sat on several editorial boards, including the Journal of Middle East Women's Studies, Politics and Gender, the Journal of World Systems Research, and Global Papers in International Development. In 2018-19, she was a Fulbright US scholar, discipline peer reviewer for sociology, and continues to serve as an invited country expert and coder for the Varieties of Democracy project. At Northeastern University, where she teaches Middle East Studies and Capstone International Affairs, as well as Women and World Politics and Social Movements. And I am Soha Bayoumi. I'm a lecturer in the History of Science Department at Harvard University and Assistant Dean of Harvard College. So, I also want to say, so are you currently in Boston?
I am.
Okay, and I am in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and today's October 16th, 2020, but even despite our geographical proximity, we're doing this via Zoom, given the COVID world we're living in today. So let me start by asking you about what you remember about the founding of AMUS or JMUS.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly AMUS. What I remember was that it was the brainchild of Suwa Joseph. And as I understand it, Suwad and several other people, but mainly Suwad, had taken issue with a certain entertainment at an annual meeting of Mesa. Evidently, there was belly dancing and some such thing. And they felt that this was inappropriate and decided that those of us who were working on women and gender issues in the Middle East really needed to come together and create some kind of a group that would steer people's attention, members' attention, away from, oh, I don't know, women and belly dancing, towards some more serious issues having to do with women and gender issues in the Middle East.
Fascinating. I was not aware of that particular incident or situation that you're describing.
Really? No one has mentioned it yet?
not the ones I interviewed. But
wow. Okay.
Interesting. Yeah. Everyone, of course, credits Saad. Yeah, that's fascinating. What role do you think AMUS has had in feminist academic studies and in the field of Middle East studies as well?
Oh my gosh, I think it's been tremendous. I mean, it pioneered in terms of an association, because of course there had been books and articles written about women and gender issues as early as the 1970s, really. But to gather together the women who were working, sort of, you know, more advanced scholars, and then also to encourage scholarship on the part of younger and emerging scholars, I think was just a brilliant move. And since then, I think that AMUS has really made its mark on Middle East studies not only in the United States, but I think around the world, because if I'm not mistaken, it might be the only association that is dedicated to the study of women and gender. Because of course we have many Middle East studies associations in different countries. I mean, there's BRISMIS in the UK and so on. But I think that this is the only one that really is dedicated to the study of the academic scholarly study of women and gender issues in the Middle East. It's been a very, very significant impact. And of course, with the journal that came later on, the journal has also been stellar, really. I mean, it's had one fantastic editor or editorial team after another, and it just keeps getting better and better.
Great to hear. Do you, you served as president of AMUSE at one point also, and could you talk a little bit about that experience and about, you know, your time on the board and, you know, any of the initiatives that might have been on the table at the time?
Well, to be honest, my time as president was curtailed in part because I was also dealing with a younger sister who was very, very ill. So I couldn't serve, you know, the full 2 years. And to be honest, I was not as active as president of AMUSE as I had been at the beginning, you know, when I was among the founders and also among that editorial team that was writing up the newsletter and, you know, distributing it and making sure that, you know, our group stayed together. So I can't say very much about my term as president other than to point out that it coincided with 9/11 and with the American invasion of Afghanistan. So I shared that presidency with Janet Afari. So I did 1 year because I couldn't do 2 years because of I was, you know, taking my sister for her treatments. And Janet Afari then took the second year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that was a momentous year. It was a momentous year for me personally, obviously, because of my family tragedy, but also because it coincided with 9/11 and in particular with the American invasion of Afghanistan, which just took that country from bad to worse.
Right. Can you remember a particular role that AMUSE might have played or pushed, for example, MESA to play in regards to 9/11 or to the American invasion of Afghanistan?
I don't really. I wish I did, but I don't. I'm also not aware of what we did in 2003, when again the Americans invaded, along with the Brits, invaded Iraq. I know that there was a great deal of activity and activism around that. And personally, I went to, you know, a lot of demonstrations. In fact, I went to a demonstration in Washington, D.C. the day before my younger sister died. So I think a lot of us were very much involved with that. But I can't recall, I'm afraid, without checking my files to see if AMUSE issued a statement, which I'm sure it did, and whether there were any articles that might have been written on this subject too. One thing that I will say though, Soha, is that, right after the invasion of Iraq, there was a flurry of articles that were written by, I guess, from a certain perspective, a kind of a third worldist, decolonial, post-colonial feminist perspective that was attacking American feminists for not having taken a position against the American invasion of Iraq. And I had to do something that I normally don't do, was to defend American feminists in particular, the American feminists who were in and around Ms. Magazine and the feminist majority, because in fact, Ms. Magazine had issued one and possibly two special editions of the magazine opposed to the American invasion and calling for peace and calling for the US first not to invade, and then afterwards, a whole slew of articles criticizing the American invasion, with articles by Grace Paley and, you know, quite a number of course, Gloria Steinem herself, Eleanor Peel, and quite a number of American feminists that, for example, earlier on, I might not have been terribly enamored of, but I was impressed by the fact that they did take a position, and I felt that, you know, I had to defend their position. So I have, you know, gone on record to say that that criticism was misplaced. Yes, you can criticize people like, I don't know, maybe Hillary Clinton, you know, that kind of imperial feminist. Mm-hmm. But the women around Ms. Magazine, no, they were not imperial feminists. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Could you talk a little bit about any influence that A-Muse or J-Muse may have had over the years on your research and your teaching, or, you know, whether the scholarship or the community itself?
Both. Certainly the community of scholars in A-Muse is something that is very inspiring and something that's very supportive. We've had a couple of, you know, big conferences too. For example, there was that wonderful Bellagio conference that took place. I always associate A-Muse, unfortunately, with my sister's illness. But it was also, it was something that I attended, when she was going through her treatments and such. But that was an amazing conference. And again, you know, we all gathered in Bellagio and discussed, for example, the launching of the journal. So I was part of the, I remember this now. I was part of the initial issue of J-Muse. Mm-hmm. Several of us who had attended the Bellagio meeting then contributed to that inaugural issue. So again, the camaraderie, the feminist solidarity, the support, the friendship of A-Muse is really, very, very, important to a lot of us. And then just the quality of both the annual meetings then that A-Muse has organized at Mesa, but in particular, the scholarship in J-Muse. The scholarship is really quite outstanding. And I have not only read, you know, the different articles in the different journals, I have cited them and I have assigned quite a number of them to the students in my Women in World Politics class, and also to those in the, I teach a graduate course in gender and social movements, to those students who might be interested in women's movements, feminist movements, I've cited that. So it's, both the association and the journal have been, very meaningful and very significant and have made a mark.
Fabulous. What are your expectations for the future of A-Muse or J-Muse? What trajectories do you hope that they will take?
Well, I think that, one of the shortcomings that I see, and I hope that it moves a little bit more in that direction, but, maybe I will have to be a little more proactive in that regard. But this is something that is true of Mesa and Middle East studies in general. Political economy is under-researched. Women and gendered political economy, women, then, economic issues, female labor force participation. I don't know state economic policies and women. That would be something that we could move a little bit more towards. And I think because A-Muse and J-Muse has done a little bit less of that kind of research on political economy, a friend, a Turkish friend, a political scientist who also works on political economy, and myself, her name is Gamze Çoftar, and she's at Colorado State University, and myself, we formed something called Feminist Political Economy of the Middle East, or FEMME, F-E-M-M-E for short. And this is something that's really complementary to AMUs. And it's also complementary to the International Association for Feminist Economics, because of course they do political economy. There are some feminist economists there from Turkey in particular, who do work on feminist political economy of the Middle East. But we wanted to create a smaller network that would really just focus on feminist political economy. So we're also a kind of a complement to another network called ERF, the Economic Research Forum. Yeah. For, you probably have heard of it.
Yeah, I know the ERF, yeah.
For the Arab countries, Iran and Turkey. But of course, they're, you know, they don't do a great deal of work on women and gender. When they do, on the rare occasions that they do, again, it's very highly technical, you know, it's highly, highly econometric and so on, and very specific, highly technical, and a little bit, you know, sort of narrowly focused, let's put it that way. Whereas we wanted to have a broader political economy approach and a feminist approach. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I would hope that, you know, JMUs might have a special issue, or start trying to solicit, you know, more articles on feminist political economy in the Middle East. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So as current editor of JMUs, I would highly encourage you perhaps to, you know, be a guest editor for a special issue on that. I think that would be amazing. So yeah, no, it is not my area of expertise, but it's definitely something that I think we're lacking in terms of submissions. We don't get that many submissions that look into these issues, which are definitely extremely important. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, thank you. Mm-hmm. So these are all my questions, but I would like to give you an opportunity at the end to, if there's anything that you would like to add, anything that you wish I had asked about, or anything that you think would be important to document for this oral history project.
Well, I think the only thing I would say is that, you know, having been a member of a number of, you know, associations and organizations in their early years of development, there's something incredibly exciting and rewarding about being part of the founding of something. And then looking back, as I am doing now, at all those years ago when, you know, we founded AMUs as this small association of a small group of, you know, feminist scholars of the Middle East and North Africa, with a kind of a rather modest newsletter that we were putting out and mailing in those old days. And I'm talking about the 1980s, you know, and the early 1990s. And then, you know, the founding of the journal and all the excitement about that too. There's something incredibly inspiring and rewarding and exciting about being part of the founding of something that has then gone on to be so significant and so important to so many people, and that is so highly regarded, so both the association and the journal. So those early years I remember with tremendous fondness, I must say, and especially running around and being in touch with Margot and Annabelle and others who were working with me on the newsletter. One can't forget those early years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and thank you for sharing your memories about those early years. Appreciate that.